What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 119 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined by the king of the courtside himself, not an imposter, the original king of the courtside, Joey. What's up, buddy?
What's up, John? Life is good. We are here a Monday after an excellent Fortnite tournament that we got the pleasure of casting this past weekend, and there is so much going on in the world of gaming and esports.
Almost too much, but really, can there ever be too much going on in gaming and esports? I do not think so. But Joey hit on a great point. We did cast that amazing Fortnite tournament this past weekend, and if you were following us on Twitter, you would have gotten all the deets, all the inside information. So head on over to Twitter, follow Joey at Courtside King, follow myself, John, at Fiasco. If you're watching here live on Twitch, welcome to the show. Our handle's below those beautiful mugshots you're watching. And if you're listening to the podcast later on, those will be in the show notes below. Nation, as if the Battle Royale scene wasn't crowded enough, EA and Respawn drop Apex Legends, the latest game in that genre. And we've played it. And we've seen the records that have been broken by it. And you're right, we're going to be talking about it this week. Joey, what else are we covering this week on episode 119?
John, the Overwatch League also kicks off this week, so we've been talking about, or we are going to be talking about Overwatch. We're going to be talking sponsorships, Xbox continuing to make some big moves. Pennsylvania has added an esports day, and John, like you said, Apex. Apex is a big topic on this episode.
Wait, Pennsylvania has an esports holiday now?
It does.
Is it like a paid day off? Because if it is, I'm totally moving to Pennsylvania.
Not quite. They actually might tax you.
What? Tax? Okay, Joey, look. I don't like taxes, but we have a whole lot of info to talk about today. So, Joey, it's time for that time-honored tradition passed down from generation to generation. I am talking, of course, of the one thing that's going to help us get us through this episode. That is the drink of choice. Sir, for the 119th time, your beverage, please.
John, I'm going with some Woodford Reserve bourbon tonight.
Oh, look at you. Look, we're both rocking the classy glasses. So I, too, have a lovely glass here. This is actually from my fraternity back at George Mason from the formal we had. So lovely Kai Sai shout out there. You're welcome. I forgot what I'm having.
A whiskey That's sour. Never a That's good right. sign.
I'm having a whiskey sour. That's what I'm having. Joey, we have our beverages. We have our topics. I don't want to waste any more time because we got a lot to talk about. Let's get right into gaming and eat. Sports news. Let's go.
John, we are kicking it off with a roster industry acquisition. Denial Esports have added friend of the show, Justin M. Jacobson, as the organization's new COO and general counsel. Former NFL player Hank Baskett was recently brought on board as the owner as well, or as one of the owners of the group. And the organization most notably known for their recent news is in their second place finish in Gears of War. They are now moving into Fortnite as well as looking to work with a franchise for NBA 2K League as well.
Yeah, and Jacobson has really been representing a lot of the players in the NBA 2K League as well. So this is a really great move for Justin going forward. Really excited for him and for Denial Esports. It's a really great opportunity for them to grow their brand in the esports industry.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be big. We know Justin from the NBA 2K. He was the talent agent of Moody. I believe he still is. So we worked with him to get Moody on the show for an interview. It was a great experience working with him. We had a little trouble here and there as far as contacts, but it's so new having players in esports as far as having agents. Justin, definitely one of the better ones out there, though, as opposed to getting back to us. He was pretty good about that. So it was good working with him. I'm glad he gets a new step forward here with Denial Esports, and I think he'll do a great job over there. Moving into partnerships, let's talk Overwatch League. They have teamed up with Twitter to add team logos to each team's hashtagged motto. John, we already saw this with League of Legends. We've seen it with some other esport organizations and other esport leagues. Overwatch League, it just feels right for it to be the next step in the process.
Yeah, you know, I feel like this needs to become an industry standard, not just for esports, but sports, period. Having that cool little logo next to your team's hashtag, it's a great way to represent your team, who you root for, who you're talking about. It's a great way to have that brand identity. So, you know, when you see Justice is Served on Twitter, you also see that awesome little shield logo for the Washington Justice of the Overwatch League. That's awesome. When you see Roar On, you see the Soul Dynasty Tiger there. And, you know, all the amazing hashtags that all the teams have. You know, we saw it launch, I think it was Summer Split for League of Legends. Some of the teams got those same logos added with their hashtag, whether it's, you know, hashtag C9 win, or Fnatic win, or FNC win, or whether that came later on down the road. I know there was a lot of controversy about who did it, but I feel like that's a smart move, is branding with Twitter. Twitter's still probably the most popular social media platform in esports, so that's a really solid move having Overwatch League team up with Twitter to do that.
And not only that, but both parties benefit. Everyone involved benefits, really. Fans are able to interact in a new way through this. Organizations are able to get their mottos and their logos out there. Twitter as well builds itself as an esports platform. Like you said, John, we see Instagram kind of moving its way in. Facebook has made some storm here and there. But overall, Twitter feels like the best way for players to interact with fans. Now this is another way to do that, another way for players to identify those fans and organizations to continue getting their logo out there, continue building that motto up. I mean, I feel like I don't know half of the team's logos, but now that I'm seeing them more and more often on Twitter, associated with the logo that goes with that organization or that team, I'm starting to recognize them more and more and be able to call them out in certain situations. And the Overwatch League is not done yet, because it also teamed up with Coca-Cola this week, that becoming the official beverage sponsor of the league. So, John, we already have Toyota there as the Motorola, or the, not Motorola, the Motor, wow, see, we record this an hour later and I'm all over the place. The automotive sponsor of the league in Toyota. Now we have Coca-Cola coming in as the beverage sponsor. This does not surprise me at all. I feel like it was going to be Coca-Cola. It was going to be Pepsi. It was just a matter of time. Coca-Cola saw the numbers. They wanted those gamers. They wanted those viewers. They're buying in right now and becoming that official sponsor.
Okay, Joey, so I have to ask, if it wasn't going to be Coke and it wasn't going to be Pepsi, who would it have been?
Ooh, see, that's tough. I would have to go with Monster or Red Bull. I don't think either one of them is owned by one of those, correct?
I think Monster is. I think Red Bull is on their own still. But that doesn't mean they can't be the official energy drink. But no, I think this is a great fit for Coke. Personally, as a Coke fan myself, you know, I think it's a smart move. You know, Coca-Cola has that timeless logo, that cursive Coca-Cola that's on bottles, on cans, pretty much everywhere. You know it worldwide. It's in multiple different languages, using different styles, you know, whether it's written in Roman letters like English or German, or whether it's written in other languages like Mandarin or Hangul or Japanese. You know exactly what it is. It's a certain style. It's a great brand, and it brings that validation with it. And that's what Coca-Cola is doing here, you know, teaming up with Overwatch League. I think it's a great move. For both Overwatch League and Coca-Cola, it's huge and really gives more to validate the esports scene, with Coca-Cola getting more and more involved, in this case with Overwatch League.
And this isn't the first time we've seen Coke take this plunge either. They've done it for League of Legends viewing parties as well. I remember last year's Worlds and the year before, there were Coca-Cola viewing experiences where they would team up with the local movie theater and ended up hosting the World Championship there as like a bigger viewing party for fans of League of Legends. This, to me, is that next step forward. Now you're not just doing viewing parties. You decided you're going to sponsor a league altogether. I think that's a huge step forward into esports for Coke, and I think it's a great move altogether. And then the New York Excelsior have signed T-Mobile as their presenting sponsor, with the deal including a jersey logo as well. John, again, T-Mobile, they're not new to the scene. They've been here before. They've sponsored multiple teams before, now jumping into the Overwatch League. To my knowledge, this is the first team they've sponsored in the Overwatch League. I might be wrong on that one. Regardless, New York Excelsior are an incredible team. Definitely the top two last year as far as all teams that played. They're right up there with the London Spitfire for that championship. And here they signed a big, big sponsor here in T-Mobile as far as mobile sponsors go.
Yeah, and T-Mobile, again, when you want to talk about brands that you can easily identify, T-Mobile is right there. The T with the dots next to it. A major European soccer club has a T-Mobile sponsorship with them on the chest, Bayern Munich. SK Gaming, same thing on the front of their jerseys, T-Mobile, the T with the dots next to it. Now that same logo is going to be on the New York Excelsior. It's a great deal for both organizations here. T-Mobile, a world leader in telecommunications, and New York XL, you know, Excelsior, you know, statistically sane and record-wise, the best regular season team last year in season one. So it's a great partnership for both, and it's right up there with the Coca-Cola sponsorship. It's a huge deal.
definitely ginormous. And I have a feeling this is far from the last. We've already seen Sour Patch Kids. Wow, I'm all over the place tonight. Sour Patch Kids buy into the Overwatch League, Toyota, T-Mobile, My Tongue Twisters. Just tons and tons of sponsors buying into Overwatch League. I have a feeling as Season 2 continues to go on, we saw 8 teams get added in the offseason here, moving from 12 to 20. We're going to continue to see more and more teams added for Season 3. As more teams buy in, as more nations' capitals buy in, as all of these places throughout the world buy in, more sponsors worldwide are going to buy in as well. Okay, let's see if I can keep going here. Other news, major inside Xbox update. So Microsoft has teased plans to bring the Xbox Live to Nintendo Switch, iOS, and Android. John, this is giant to me. So they already talked about bringing Project xCloud, which is going to be a streaming service where you can play Xbox games on PC and mobile devices. Now they're talking about bringing the whole online platform to other platforms, both mobile and the Nintendo Switch. I have to give myself a bit of credit here. I feel like I called this back in June, that I could see the potential of Xbox Live moving to Nintendo Switch, especially with the struggles that Switch's online subscription service has had. Now they have a chance of getting possibly the best multiplayer platform out there. As far as console goes, I would have to argue this is much better than the other competitors. Obviously, they all have their differences, but achievements would be another thing that would carry over according to these leaks. And to me, unlocking an achievement on Xbox Live is completely different than an achievement everywhere else. Unlocking an achievement on Steam, I'm like, yeah, woo! Unlocking an achievement on Switch, yeah, okay. But Xbox Live, you get a little da-ding, and there's a little diamond icon that pops up if it's a rare achievement. And I feel like something like that, if they're able to port that over, obviously it's not the biggest part. The biggest part is playing with friends and having that cross-platform playability. But if you can get the little achievement da-ding sound, I'm totally all for it.
That the ding sound is also present on the PlayStation Network, sir, so Xbox
it's definitely inferior.
So in PlayStation, it's in the upper left-hand corner, and Xbox is in the middle of your screen, which, you know, that's terrible placement, in my opinion.
No. It's not in the middle. It's in the bottom.
It's in the bottom middle of the screen. Same thing. But at the end of the day, you know, this is big for multiple reasons. One, Nintendo and Sony both being Japanese companies. Nintendo not going that route, staying with a fellow Japanese company in that partnership, bringing to the online platform. Two, Microsoft really expanding their footprint again, in this case, bringing their online network now to the Nintendo Switch, which I agree with you, Joey. It's a huge deal for Microsoft and for Nintendo Switch users. Now, the only concern, and I bring it up every time we bring up the Xbox Live system, Joey, you and I both use it on the PC. If they're going to keep expanding their footprint, they need to have an application that actually works. And it's a headache. It's a frustration whenever we try to play like Sea of Thieves with our friends on Xbox. It's almost impossible to play with a console player if you're playing on the PC through the Xbox Live application. The chat is horrible. Joining games is a struggle. I think I have the Xbox Live and the Xbox Live beta both downloaded, and I have to use them both to interact with people on console. That needs to change. So, you know, if Xbox is going to keep going down this road, which I think they should, they need to have an application that, I don't know, works. Hello?
And we already know that's on their roadmap from the event they had in November. They said they're going to redo the Windows Store. They're redoing the way it interacts with PC. So I already think that's coming. And it works pretty well on mobile already as far as the app itself. So in doing this, in going to the Switch and going to mobile devices, I think the PC is going to stay included with that. They know the Windows Store needs an overhaul. And the way they're talking, honestly, John, I think they're going to try to compete with Steam and with Epic. I think they're going to try to revamp the Windows Store to that level and then undercut them completely and maybe give developers even higher than the 82 or whatever percentage they're making now. I would not be surprised if Microsoft goes and only takes 10% off the developers. Because they're going so developer-friendly. People are loving designing for the Xbox going into this next generation, and I think they're going to continue driving forward with that. With that being said, I love the idea of a full cross-platform ability here, and the fact that Xbox is not saying, we just want cross-platform for Rocket League and Fortnite, and maybe Minecraft here for Nintendo Switch. We want to make cross-platform available for every single game we put out that is not console exclusive. That is the biggest statement with this for me. The fact that they're saying PC, Switch, iOS, Android, we want to be able to play with all of you no matter what the game is. As long as it runs on your platform, you can now connect with Xbox Live.
Well, thank goodness PlayStation developed cross-platform in their press release a couple months ago. So thank you, to our friends at Sony for developing cross-platform that's been out for, I don't know, decades, it feels like.
And this is the big thing. Like, this is going to hit Sony as well. And I don't think Microsoft is down to, like, they would be perfectly fine with Sony joining in, is what I'm trying to say. With that being said, Sony takes every single title exclusively, it feels like. When Fortnite wants to go cross-platform, when Rocket League wants to go cross-platform, it isn't just, let's look at cross-platform in general. It's, let's beta test with each of these. So to me, Sony's going to be behind on every single one of these cross-platform play opportunities, and maybe some they even deny straight up. If they think a game is not going to be hugely successful and it doesn't need cross-platform capabilities, maybe they just deny it straight up, while Xbox can continue to play with Switch, with iOS, with Android, with PC. So to me, Xbox is taking a very friendly approach here, a very developer-friendly and player-friendly approach, while Sony might be sitting back playing a little bit more defensively on this side. With that being said, we really don't know. This is just teasing plans, so we're going to have to see how it all plays out.
And also, the reason why developers love building for the next Xbox console is because Microsoft is buying all the developers for the next console. Because, Joey, I swear, if we talk about someone else joining the initiative this episode, I might just pour myself another whiskey sour before the end of this episode.
Well, my friend, get pouring, because Victoria Miller has joined the initiative. This is our, I think it's our eighth one in a row, I believe. A number of major game updates were announced at this recent event as well, and we will jump right into Victoria Miller. But first, Microsoft Studios, all of those developers they ended up buying, John, have rebranded to Xbox Game Studios. So I was hesitant on this move. I like Microsoft Studios. I love the logo. But I do like this move, and I like the reasoning they give. In quotes, the name change was made to recognize Microsoft's commitment to games above all else on its platform and to support the creators making them. That, to me, coupled with the fact that they're trying to take Xbox Live to all these other platforms, begins to make more sense. So, John, not only is Victoria Miller incredibly talented, but she also comes from PlayStation.
No,
she's actually an 8-year veteran at PlayStation who served as a producer and helped ship several major releases at PlayStation during those 8 years she was there. This includes the likes of huge titles such as Little Big Planet 3, Beyond Two Souls, Until Dawn, Detroit Become Human, No Man's Sky, and others. Obviously, No Man's Sky had a little troubled release there. But overall, Victoria has a great resume. These are just a few of the titles she helped. Being at PlayStation, being at an Xbox competitor, as well as a top-of-the-line gaming company for 8 years, means she has a ton of experience that she's coming in with. Now she joins the legions of what feels like Microsoft is adding it in developers, especially at the Initiative Studio.
Joey, this is exactly what happened when Darth Vader rose to power. Is everyone started joining the dark side, and eventually the dark side fell and collapsed when the Jedi, or in this case Sony, came back, and it was the return of PlayStation. Look, Victoria, PlayStation by name only, and none of these titles are big. I haven't even heard of 90% of these titles. You know, this is not a dagger in Sony whatsoever. Okay, obviously that's pure sarcasm. This is huge for Xbox. This is huge for Microsoft. This is someone directly crossing lines and going to Microsoft and working for your number one competitor, Xbox, Microsoft. This is huge. She's bringing over all this information. And there is no documentation in the world that is going to stop her from, you know, talking about how Sony does things and how, you know, they treat developers and what they're doing and some strategies they're using. This is a huge signing for Microsoft, and it's really going to hurt PlayStation in the long term. Now, out of those lists of games, Joey, that you put out there, No Man's Sky is probably the only one that I'd probably be a little embarrassed to put on my resume. But everything else, Little Big Planet, you know, this game, you know, that centers around a character that looks like a hacky sack. You know, I thought it would be absolutely miserable. It's a game that I enjoyed playing. You know, Little Big Planet 1 and 2. Haven't played 3. Beyond Souls, Detroit Become Human. You know, those are all big titles that did incredibly well for PlayStation. So that's a huge gain for Microsoft and a huge loss for PlayStation. PlayStation is starting to bleed, and they're bleeding out quicker and quicker every week, it seems like.
I'm honestly stunned, though, the fact that Xbox continues to pull in talent at this level. I mean, they're pulling people from PlayStation, from Nintendo, from tons of big-name studios, especially PlayStation studios, like Naughty Dog is a huge one they got an environmental designer from. The Lara Croft series with Tomb Raider, they pulled some really good developers. Gallagher, the head of the whole studio, is from that Tomb Raider franchise with Crystal Dynamics. They've pulled in so many huge developers, and they continue to buy more. And by E3, John, since they're the only one presenting at E3 as far as between the Sony-Microsoft wars, as you call them, the fact that they're the only one presenting means there is going to be bigger stuff there, too. They're going to add more developers. And I love the fact that we see more and more developers under them going with this free content approach. Sea of Thieves has been killing it, dropping free content for over a year now. They just made top streamed game a couple weeks ago, and they're going to continue to find their way back out there as more and more content is dropped from that game. So yeah, they might not have the biggest amount of players from day to day as like a Fortnite or an Apex, but overall, the fact that they can continue to find their way climbing up is a big sign for Microsoft. And the fact that they've invested so much into the future, as we've said over and over again, I think it's going to be huge. But like you said, John, and we bring it up every time, the initiative just has so much talent, they cannot fail. The fact that there is so much there, if they fall short, Microsoft is doomed. Just because they've put so much into it, they brought in so many high-profile hires, they just really have to produce anything less than a triple A, almost a quadruple A at this point, is failing for them.
I want a Penta A.
I can do a Penta A. I like that.
A 5A title. I mean, that's really what everyone's expecting now. There's no reason to put out a game that people expect. You really have to blow people away with a lot of these people you're bringing in. There's almost no excuse not to. So I'm excited to see what Xbox does here with all these developers. I'm also curious to see what's going to happen with PlayStation. How are they going to respond to all this? Because as of right now, the Sony camp has been incredibly quiet. So it's going to be interesting to see what decisions they make down the road here to stop the bleeding. Who knows? Maybe they pull out of this whole cross-platform thing altogether and try to be the exclusive cool kids club, which I think is a terrible idea. But I also don't think that joining Xbox would be a great idea either, because then that's you admitting defeat. So it's catch-22 for Sony, and I'm curious to see which direction they're going to go.
Okay, so let's talk about it for a minute. We have another minute to go here. So we're talking Sony and Xbox for viewers just joining. Overall, John, if you're Sony right now, you've already said you're not going to E3 this next year. You already have shown a lot of your big titles, at least to our knowledge, that will be coming out in the next year or two. What approach do you make? Do you hold your own conference, kind of like we saw with XO18 for Xbox last year in November? Do you try to bring in some hype that way, or do you just let it ride for now?
No, I feel like if you're Sony, you need to put yourself out there. You've got to find a way to counteract what Microsoft is doing. Pulling out of E3 is not the right move. Holding your own conferences, that is a right move, but you can't exchange the two. You have to be as public and as transparent as possible. Teasers, planned leaks, you got to do something to make the Sony fanboy and community excited about still wanting to play on the next generation PlayStation. And I'm a prime example. As a Sony fanboy, I've played the Sony PlayStation since PlayStation 1. I came to PlayStation from the Nintendo 64. So, you know, having that been my first console, going to PlayStation 1 and been PlayStation exclusive ever since until I go to a gaming PC, it's really hard to defend what Sony's doing when they're sitting back and doing absolutely nothing. You can only hide behind these exclusive titles and these exclusive series for so long. Take Metal Gear Solid, for example, a title that I absolutely love and a series that I absolutely love. That's even available on multiple platforms now. They didn't even stay exclusive to Sony. You have a ton of other titles, like MLB The Show. I mean, that's really one of the only titles still exclusive to Sony that get a lot of people frustrated. But, you know, that's a baseball game. That doesn't pull in the same amount of people as a Metal Gear Solid. Or, you know, cross over the line to the Xbox. It doesn't bring in the same kind of excitement that Halo brings in, or any other title like Gears of War or anything like that. So your exclusives are starting to become lame and lackluster. You need to do something, and retreating isn't the way to do it. You need to start signing people. You need to make people excited. Becoming a hermit is not the way to do it, and it's really disheartening to at least this Sony PlayStation fanboy. There we go.
Were you about to say Sony? Never mind.
I was about to say, something that.
I think I saw where that was going.
It's been a long day.
Yeah, I mean, you got to defend Sony a bit, though, as well. They have great franchises. I mean, Spider-Man kicked it out of the world this year. God of War was Game of the Year at many different events. So they're still bringing in stuff here. Uncharted is another big one. overall, they still have good exclusives, but when we look at those exclusives, I think the thing to worry about a bit is the fact that they're losing some of the lead designers at those, whether it be the lead storyteller, the lead environmental designer. A lot of those particular players in those studios are moving on to other studios. In particular, Xbox is the initiative is where we're seeing a number of them go. Now, one environmental designer I don't think is going to make the worlds of a difference as far as these exclusive titles, as there's many, many different environmental designers there. At the same point, when you're taking the lead one, you also take some of that direction, some of that innovation. It's going to allow for new people to step up and possibly have new ideas, new ways to go about things. At the same point, you do lose that direction and that veteran leadership up front. So it's a little bit of a pro and con list there as far as Sony and Xbox go. Overall, I'm excited to see both of them playing at all cylinders, though. When both are playing at their best, when they're both designing at their best, I think we see the best in gaming. The fact that they're competing at the highest level, and I think we might get that next generation. Xbox is already killing it as far as systems go for next generation, it sounds like. Then on top of that, they've made all these signings with developers so they can bring a lot more titles next gen, and I doubt Sony's going to sit back. I think we see Sony adding backwards compatibility, possibly. I could see them adding more and more different titles into the mix than what we already know is coming. I have a feeling we're like at a Watergate, and it's going to break at some point here, and Sony's going to let us know there's more titles in the way. Microsoft's going to let us know about the new technologies they have planned, and on top of that, consoles are going to continue to rise up. But they still have to compete with PC, and that's always going to be a very big struggle for them.
I mean, I think one of the biggest tells, Joey, is when you take a look at the history, even here on this podcast, how many times have we talked about God of War being the game of the year? Once. How many times do we talk about Xbox and another incredible signing that they signed to their initiative? Like an every week thing. Sony hasn't said anything. And when Sony does speak, they make themselves look stupid. I constantly refer to Sony inventing cross-platform play because of the way they worded their press release. It was completely arrogant. You know, and there's no need for that. You know, they're sitting here acting like they're the king until they're dethroned. Well, I hate to tell you this, Sony. Microsoft has crossed the bridge. They're over the moat. They've kicked your gate in, and they're in your courtyard. They're coming for your crown. And I'd be nervous if I was you, because they have a lot of talent on their side. And when you partner that up with the PC and Nintendo, ooh, I'll tell you what, that makes me nervous.
Well, and mobile devices, too. Can't forget that either.
Devices. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. I have a feeling we're going to see it flop again, just like we saw PlayStation 2 to Xbox 360 to PS4. I would not be surprised if we see it jumping back to Xbox 2 or whatever they're going to end up developing next, but we'll have to wait and see. Obviously, a lot of big signings happening for Microsoft in the initiative, but we do not know what these games look like yet. We just have an idea based on the people they have signed. So from there, I'm expecting new, fresh ideas, new IPs, and I'm hoping we get some great ones. Ooh, this is a unique one. So Pennsylvania, one of those states, the Commonwealth state, the state that is usually the beginner for a lot of things colonial. Well, now they're making a move here, introducing Esports Day and calling February the Esports Month. So for those of you in Pennsylvania, February 6th, it's already passed. I apologize. Happy belated Esports Day. February 6th is going to be your Esports Day moving forward. It passed unanimously in the House of Representatives for Pennsylvania. But on top of that, John, there is a little negative side that comes with this as well. So that was House Resolution 66 that passed the beginning thing for Esports Day and the Esports Month of February. House Bill number 109 is now going to cause some upheavals, though, as it is looking to add a 10% sin tax, which will be paid out to the Digital Protection for School Safety account, and it's going to tax games in particular that have violence in them. I know. And it really gets to me. There's an article in here that has a quote from Mr. Quinn, from Representative Christopher B. Quinn, that says, studies have shown that playing violent video games can increase aggressive thoughts, behaviors, and feelings in both the short term and the long term. John, we've had this argument many, many times. There are no real studies out there that show this. Many have actually debunked this particular theory. So as we see another politician coming out here giving a wonderful quote that can be overturned. With that being said, I like the idea that this is benefiting something good. I think Digital Protection for School Safety account is a good idea. With that being said, this is not the way to go about it. In fact, this is a false way to go about it, in my humble opinion. Go ahead, John. Roast it.
look, I don't want to get too political because I don't like taxes to begin with. I'm very anti-tax, but a sin tax. Joey, you hit the nail on the head. Those studies that these informed representatives of the American people are citing are false and biased and have been proven time and time again, but yet they still hit home on that narrative because it sounds good. I'm not going to point fingers at which party is very prone at doing this, but there is one party that tends to do this more than the other. It goes all the way back to the 90s with the Columbine school shooting. Oh, the two shooters played Doom. That's the reason why. That and rock music. Give me a freaking break. The other shooters in other schools, oh, well, they played violent video games. You want to know something? I play violent video games. I have never once wanted to pick a gun up and go shoot anybody. Joey, you've played violent video games, and you are one of the nicest people I've ever met in my entire life. And I'm not just saying that because you're technically my boss here at OTN. I'm saying that because it is legit. You are a nice person, but you tend to play violent video games as well. That doesn't make you a bad person. When a government official goes off and says violent video games make you a bad person, that's an absolute joke. An absolute joke. And then when you have the World Health Organization coming out saying that video games are a mental disorder because they're addictive and so on and so forth. Yes. Can people with an addictive personality get addicted to a video game? Yes. Just like a person with an addictive personality can be addicted to alcohol. The problem is once you start the negative stereotypes and it starts being picked up and played in public, it keeps rolling and rolling and rolling and rolling. And misinformation keeps getting spread more and more. This is a prime example of how this has become, how this started out as a snowball, and now it's a freaking avalanche. A syntax on video games because they're violent? Is that the whole reason why we have a rating system on video games that no store actually enforces? That no digital downloader enforces? That no parent even looks twice at? But God forbid that same kid tries to go to an AMC movie theater and watch a rated R movie. They can't get in. Why can't we do that for video games? Why can't parents be more responsible for their own children and the content that they're playing? That's the parents' job because, I don't know, they're parents. They're responsible of raising their kid. They don't want their kid playing violent video games? Don't play violent video games. To put a syntax on it, that's absolutely ridiculous. They're not gambling. They're not smoking. They're not drinking. They're not doing anything that can cause, you know, financial harm, harm to themselves or others, or so on and so forth. It's a freaking video game. If you're watching on Twitch right now, are they going to sit here and tell you that, oh, you're a lazy human being because you're watching a podcast on Twitch? I mean, some of the older baby boomers will probably say that. The same people that are pointing their fingers at video games for school violence because they point fingers at things they don't understand. But that's about it. Joey, this is an absolute joke. And while we have a step forward for Esports Day and Esports Month, we have five steps back because of this bogus House bill that is adding a 10% sin tax. What an absolute joke.
Now, this is not approved yet. Let me say that as well. So it has been introduced, but it is not approved yet. So it might not make its way through. The Esports Day and Esports Month did. So we'll have to wait and see how this one's voted on. I do not expect this to go through unanimously at the very least. So we'll have to keep you updated on that. With that being said, in that same study, though, there is a quote that says it is important to keep in mind that violent video game exposure is only one risk factor of aggressive behavior. For example, mental illness, adverse environments, and access to guns are all risk factors of aggression and violence as well. So where he took the study from the National Center for Health Research, Mr. Quinn did not read the whole article because there are many other things going on here besides just saying that video games can lead to violence, which we've seen debunked many, many times before. Ever since I feel like this started, it's probably like 3 years ago with a train, I think it was a train stabbing in Munich where this really started, and it just continued on since.
Yeah, you know, and the sad part is I Googled Mr. Quinn real quick just to find out what political party he's affiliated with, and boy, I was spot on. Spot on. And I hate saying that. I really hate I hate bringing up politics. I really do, especially living here in Washington, D.C., but this is a prime example of partisan politics, and it ticks me off.
I am not a big fan of either political party. I am voting for Daniel Tilson for every position. But seriously, you should consider Daniel.
You know he doesn't listen to this podcast. He has no idea what you just set him up for. And he's not old enough to run for president yet, so we have to wait a little bit longer.
No, any political office, I nominate Daniel Tilson. Go ahead and check him out. Great guy. Friend of the show.
I'm going to text him right now that you said that real quick.
Okay, politics aside, let's move on, John. We're going to talk China. This is a little political, I guess. Chinese officials have recognized esports as a profession now. So over here in .esports, the world's most populous nation has finally recognized esports as a legitimate profession. China's Ministry of Human Resources and Social Security announced 15 new professions on January 25th, including esports professional and esports operator. The news follows the Chinese government's decision to officially issue, they messed that up in the article, its support and interest in the esports industry last year. So, John, we're seeing esports professional coming out here, defining a player who competes in esports tournaments, and that is huge. On top of that, esports operator is explicitly classified as those who organize or develop content for esports tournaments. So this is giant. The fact that we see now esports players and professionals being recognized as an official job in China, that's going to help with so many visa issues we've seen across professional leagues across the world. And on top of that, now you also have tournament organizers being recognized as well. This is a huge step forward in esports, especially in one of the world's biggest, in the world's biggest nations by far.
Hey, United States of America, can we do this too? Can we officially recognize this as a legitimate career path? I know, you know, it's been dabbled with a little bit here and there. I know it's starting to be socially accepted. I mean, even Japan's done it. South Korea's done it. China's done it. I believe Germany has done it as well. A lot of countries in Europe are starting to do it. Hey, North America, we're not in the 1960s anymore. Video games are a real thing. Can we make this a real thing also that, you know, so we can stop with the whole visa crisis also when it comes to bringing in really talented players to North America? Please. Thank you.
Oh, that was the end of that?
Yeah, that was it.
I was going to take a sip, but okay, there we go.
You put your beverage down. I, on the other hand, will take a sip.
Oh, well, hey. I mean, I think this is big. And the fact that we see it coming out of China, one of the biggest nations, one of the biggest supporters of esports, it feels like, continuing to make big things happen. And I find it slightly ironic that this happens right after a Chinese team wins the biggest world championship in esports. I think there's a little bit of irony there. Now that a Chinese team has won, now this goes through. To me, that helps move this forward. With that being said, I hope this is the beginning. There are other organizations out, or other countries out there, Russia in particular, there's been a lot of visa issues coming out of. Hopefully we see Russia administer this later on as well. France, I think, has not done it either. So some other big countries that put forward a lot of esports professionals still need to move forward with making it a professional job as well. Okay, John, one of the moments we've been waiting for, Apex Legends. This game came out last Monday, right after, well, I think it came out before we recorded the podcast, but neither one of us had played it yet. Now we can officially say Apex Legends has hit 10 million players in its first 72 hours, and as of today, 25 million in its first week of play. This is ginormous. You and I both love Apex. We see endless potential for it. A lot of people are doubting it being able to push Fortnite. You and I both believe it can push Fortnite for that number one spot, if not hold it moving forward. What are your thoughts playing Apex? You've played, what, 3-4 days now at this point?
Yeah, and, you know, look, at the end of the day, I feel like Fortnite is not a complete game. I feel like it's a decent game. It is very surface level, and it really focuses on the building meta. It really focuses on the building aspect of the game, and that's great. That's fine, but that's not what a first-person shooter is. That's not what a shooter game is. It's skill. It's strategy. It's being able to sneak around a corner. It's about being tactical and not having to worry about who can build the biggest tower faster than the other random person off in the distance, or knock down their tower to try to get fall damage or anything else like that. There's so many different variables to Fortnite that a lot of people just don't like. Add that on top of Epic's unwillingness to make the game a competitive title. It is a very surface level, basic, you know, oh, we're here for the general gamer. Okay, fine. That's great. That's awesome. But the general gamer, really, you know, to be completely honest, if you're outside of your teenage years and maybe your early 20s, this Fortnite craze really isn't anything else other than a craze for younger kids. You know, if you're in your, you know, early 20s to mid 20s to your upper echelons of the esport age realm, you know, Fortnite just doesn't have that same kind of appeal. PUBG. Great game, great graphics, great idea, still broken. You have all these other Battle Royale games out there that are trying to mimic Fortnite, but just do things slightly a little different. But when it comes to like realistic graphics, we really don't have anything. Enter Apex, a game that pretty much came out of nowhere from EA and Respawn, and they're absolutely crushing it. The graphics are incredible. The gameplay is incredible. The classes, the different heroes you can play, the different legends you can play. It brings so much to a game that Fortnite couldn't even touch. The only thing that makes you different from the person right next to you in Fortnite is the skin that you wear. And that's sad. Yeah, okay, it's so surface, it's so basic. You load up Apex, you can be a tank. You can be a support player. You can be a DPS player. You know, they're all really DPS players, but, you know, you can play Lifeline. That's a medic. You can play Wraith. That is a void walker, essentially. She can time travel almost and be an invisible. You have Mirage that can, you know, use holograms for his advantage to sneak around and assassinate people. You don't have that in Fortnite. You don't have that in PUBG. That's what makes this game unique. And as of right now, you play in a trio, which is also unique. Not a solo, not a duo, but a trio. I kind of like it. And so far, I'm sold on it. I think it can give Fortnite a run for its money.
Oh, yeah. I 100% think it's going to. It has been, and it's going to continue. But, John, I love the fact they brought in so many things we love from so many other games. So you have the class-based stuff, like we see in Overwatch almost. But I love the fact they also didn't link guns to the classes. That was one of my biggest worries. I didn't want it to be like only medics could use shotguns. Only sniper-type classes could use sniper rifles. The fact that anyone can use any gun, I think, is a big plus in its category. On top of that, it feels a lot like Titanfall. From the developer of Titanfall and from a lot of developers of Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, they brought a lot of those aspects into this game. I love the wall climbing in particular. It is so fluid and it works so well. And if you get into a hard spot, it's a lot easier to climb out of than trying to jump over rocks in some other games, for sure. The guns look great. The attachments are awesome. The different ammos are very easily identifiable. So I think the fact that we have these fun classes with different unique skills that pair together very differently than we see in these other Battle Royale titles, on top of they also coupled it with great guns, great attachments, great ammo additions, and the map looks gorgeous. And on top of that, they've added really fun ways of identifying the champions and identifying the legends in the game. You have banners that you can display accolades on based on how you've done. Like if you've won a round, you can display how many rounds you've won. You can display icon for killing a whole enemy squad by yourself. There are just so many different ways to personalize it, as well as banners, skins, the stuff you see normally. But I also love the fact they went free to play. They did what Fortnite did. They've done what League of Legends did years ago. They went free to play, and they're paying themselves based on cosmetics more than anything else. On top of that, they are already jumping into esports, which we're going to talk about in a minute here. And I love that as well. The key, again, we've said this with PUBG, we've said this with Fortnite. It is not a game that you can plug into a seasonal format like we see with League of Legends. They need to do something different. You and I both prefer tournament style. I like the idea of tournaments because of all the RNG based in it. With that being said, I think tournaments can accumulate to points that could end up later down the road. For the person who wins said tournament in, let's go, Seoul, South Korea, that person earns 5 points toward this pool that gets ending up in maybe a bracket of 16 top pros at the end of the year or something like that, or top organizations. They need to be creative with it. This is something we've seen Fortnite fail at over and over. We've seen PUBG fail at. How does Apex face it now?
So something I've been thinking about is, and I hate using this example because I really dislike where I got this from. You need to do what NASCAR does. Ooh. You have a ton of different races, and based upon where you finish, you have a point total, Joey. It's kind of like what you were just saying.
Okay.
You have that point total. Then when you qualify, when you have your final five or your final 10 players that can win the championship, you keep racing. And based upon where you finish in those final games, you get championship points. And the person has the most championship points at the end of that season, if you will, based upon all those tournaments, wins. That makes sense, at least to me. I feel like that might be the only logical way you can go about making a Battle Royale game into an esport. You have to adopt what NASCAR does. It's the only logical way I can think of. If you're going to have that many people on a map together fighting against each other day in and day out. Now, that being said, you have to have a stable esport community. You have to have, you know, kind of like what you see in NASCAR. You have different teams. You have Hendrix, and that's really the only one I know in NASCAR because it's all over the dang place. And you have other team owners that have players in the game. That's what you have to do in a Battle Royale games. You have to have these organizations buy in and play those positions throughout the entire season, accumulating those points to earn their championship berth. That's really the only way I can see it, and I think Apex can do that. I think Apex has the pull right now. Fortnite doesn't want to do it. Epic does not want to do anything competitive with their game. PUBG is still a broken game. They're not going anywhere. Apex has an opportunity with the hype to really build an esport model here, and if they can do it in a tournament-based setting like that, based upon points, have PGA is another great one.
That's what I was thinking.
You win tournaments, and at the end, you have a point leader. It's as simple as that. That's the only way, logically, I think. And Joey, I'm glad you agree with me on the golf analogy here. That might be the only way to do it as an esport.
Yeah, I think of PGA even more because the fact that you can see people of all different tournaments do it. So with NASCAR, it feels like everyone represents in every tournament. With PGA, you have so many different levels of play where Tiger Woods might sit out one tournament, but he might go to the next. And you could see the same thing with these pros in this game. Maybe every pro doesn't go to every tournament. Maybe after they've done their amount, they've won a ton of money, they're number one by far, maybe they sit out and just stream that week instead of doing the tournament. So I feel like that gives a bit more options with that PGA format. Very similar to NASCAR, but also very different in that aspect. At the same point, I think Apex, like you said, has the ability to do it. I love the fact they're jumping on this early. It's not that Fortnite does not want to have a competitive scene. I think it's more the fact that Fortnite doesn't know how to go about it properly. And not only the format of the game, but the way they support esports organizations also brings a lot of question marks up to me. The fact that I have someone like give me a big pro. I can't think of the guy from FaZe off the top of my head. But let's think of a big pro. Fnatic Motor is a decent pro over in Europe, for example. I know Fnatic players pretty well as far as Fortnite goes. But when you bring someone like him in, why can't he wear Fnatic apparel? Why can't he be represented by Fnatic in those situations? I feel like if you allow the organizations to build more branding, then you build the support of those organizations as well. If I'm an org just sending a player and I'm just going to split the cash that the player earns based on his streamer profile, I'm like, okay, why am I going to support this tournament? Let him just win and I'll take my money regardless. But if my brand is represented, if it's Fnatic and these four guys throughout the tournament, then I want to promote the four guys playing because I know my logo will be shown more and more. And I think Apex is going to go about this smarter. Call of Duty 4, again, these are developers from Call of Duty 4. They worked closely with the esports team who represented organizations very, very well. For those of you who followed like Envious and Optic during that time. With that being said, with Apex having those developers, I think they'll take that approach. Again, EA is behind it, so who really knows where this goes? At the same point, the knowledge should be there. And John, before we move on, I just want to say the banners in Apex are brilliant. The fact that you're marketing the players that won the last tournament, that you're marketing the kill leaders throughout the whole game. And just imagine, you can throw a kill leader up there, and then on the two side banners, you can throw sponsors in an esports event. Could you imagine just sponsors along those banners? It'd be so easy to promote throughout the whole map.
I can imagine sponsors, but you want to know the vibe I got from seeing those banners and those announcements? Hunger Games.
It reminds me of Unreal Tournament, too. Did you ever play that?
No, I never played that, but it really reminds me of Hunger Games because when a player got eliminated, there was an announcement.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody was in the lead, they were marketed that they were in the lead to the public and in-game. There were banners. There were announcements. There were cannon shots, and there were weapon drops, and there were strategy. This is the whole Battle Royale genre, I really feel like, was a copy of like what the Hunger Games was trying to simulate in that book and in those movies. So... And I really like that Apex is really adapting that, too. I mean, because Fortnite doesn't do that. There is no announcement of a kill leader. Joey, believe it or not, I was a kill leader for a moment, and I about freaked myself out. And I was like, wait a minute, I'm the kill leader? That's a joke. PUBG doesn't do that. They do things so... They pay attention to detail in a way that will draw you in. And I feel like I was reading a Forbes article. They were saying like, well, players aren't going to just jump ship to Apex because they have a lot of time invested in Fortnite. To me, that's not a valid argument. Take a look at World of Warcraft that had millions and millions and millions of players. One bad expansion, they lost millions and millions and millions of players almost overnight. People aren't afraid to pack up and move to a different style of that same game. You know, there's something about earning your way through a game, earning those achievements, getting that whatever on Xbox that Joey was talking about. That gets people excited. You play a new game because of the new challenge that that game brings to you. That's why games like League of Legends make so many changes and Overwatch makes so many changes to their meta constantly, is because that's a way that they can keep their game being fresh, being new, being challenging. Fortnite isn't doing that just by changing your modifier on a shotgun or putting a scope on a freaking pistol. I'm excited to see what comes out of Apex here. And Joey, they're already diving into esports here with a couple tournaments coming up, I think.
Correct, yes. There's one Twitch Rivals Apex Legends Challenge that is happening February 12th and again the 19th. It's going to be a two-part tournament featuring 48 streamers divided into 16 three-person squads and a prize of $200,000 for their inaugural tournament. Streamers will be representing NA, EU, the Middle East, and Africa, earning points for winning matches and getting kills. So we'll have to see how this first one goes. Again, February 12th, and then the next turn of this particular event will be February 19th. Let's see how Apex debuts in esports.
I'm sorry, getting points for getting kills? You mean we're not going to just sit here and turtle in Fortnite and try to get points
so
that way?
They're actually using the same exact formula that Fortnite does.
Oh, no.
Yeah, as far as this particular matchup. So it's going to be you get points for winning matches, you get points for getting kills as well. I think I don't know the exact scoring, but I believe winning matches does count for more than kills. Not 100% sure on that one. Okay, let's talk LEC, though, John. We are coming toward the end of this podcast. We got a little bit to cover, though. First, week four for the LEC happened. How did it go?
No shocker here. G2 Esports is still undefeated in the LEC, going 8-0. They are still in first place for the LEC. In second place, two-way tie between Schalke and Team Vitality, sitting at 6-2. Splice in fourth place, 5-3. Origin tied with Misfits Gaming, 4-4 in fifth place. Seventh place belongs to SK Gaming. Eighth place to Excel Esports, 2-6. SK Gaming, pardon me, is at 3-5 in seventh place. Excel Esports tied with Fnatics in eighth place, 2-6. And Rogue is doing their best impression of G2 Esports if they were not G2 Esports, going 0-8 so far. So really, the big shocker still in the EULCS is Fnatic's really slow start here. They're starting to look like a team. They're competing a lot more. I feel like they've gotten better over the past several weeks, Joey. So I know you being a big Fnatic fan, there's nothing to hang your head down on right yet. But they're starting to come along, which is really good.
I'll tell you what, John. I see this as another way for Fnatic to break records, in my opinion.
Here we go.
Really, this is just a cover-up. But overall, so Fnatic, actually, they did really well in their first game of the week. They killed Excel. It looked as clean as games come, probably one of the cleanest games I've seen in a while. Then they lost to G2 in the quickest game in LEC history. Fnatic, you got to have the biggest records and the worst records over in EU. You got to have your name all over the place, huh?
Go home.
Yeah, I mean, not the prettiest. So now that they've won that achievement, I feel like it's time to turn the season all the way around and continue to climb back up to the top. It's rough being a Fnatic fan right now. I love the organization, love the team. I think they will make playoffs. I do. I think they're going to scoot in as a sixth seed, to be completely honest. Now that we're about halfway through the split, I don't think they have a shot at the number one seed. I think G2 cleanly takes number one overall. But Fnatic needs to push up to at least a six and try to find their way to get some playoff points if they want to have hopes for qualifying for Worlds again this year.
While Fnatic is unlocking achievements both for positive and negative reasons, Joey, we do have another week upon us for the LEC starting on Friday, February 14th, Joey. And I need to ask you a question. What match are you excited about this week in the LEC?
Honestly, none. it's really tough to me. There are two in particular that stand out a little bit more than the rest. I'm going to have to go both on day one, that Friday. Misfits against G2. These were the two highly touted teams coming into the split outside of Fnatic. A lot of people expected high things, but Misfits had a 0-2 week last week. They've looked a little stale. They still have tons of talent. I think G2 takes this match, but I'm interested how Misfits matches up with them halfway through the split. At the same point, my next one would be Fnatic up against Splice. Now that we saw Fnatic do really well against Excel and do really poorly against G2, where do they fall in the mid-range of these teams? I think Splice is a good opponent to try out. If Fnatic wins this one, I think we definitely see them moving toward that playoff contention. If they lose, we still have a lot of question marks for Fnatic. Anything else for the LEC, dear John?
No, I'm just looking forward to see which version of Fanatics shows up.
Yeah, you and me both, my friend. With that being said, let's talk LCS for North America. Number one, Team Liquid at 6-0, Cloud9 4-2 in that second place spot. Then we have four teams tied for third at 3-3, CounterLogic Gaming, Echo Fox, FlyQuest, and 100 Thieves. Then moving down into seventh place, we have a 2-4 win-loss ratio with TSM, Golden Guardians, Clutch Gaming, and Optic Gaming tied at that 2-4 ratio for seventh place through 10th. Yeah, NA, there is a lot of trouble with separation going on over here.
Yeah, the middle and lower echelons of the LCS are, one win apart from each other? If you go by the rules of alphabetical order, TSM is your worst team in the LCS. I say that with no pleasure. Team Liquid in first place. Look, no one's going to stop Team Liquid. They had a slow start against Clutch. They looked awful. And somehow they pulled it out from behind, and really no one was even like, oh, can Team Liquid do it? It was more of, when is Team Liquid going to do it? Cloud9, after their horrible 0-2 start, has won, you know, they've won four games in a row. Cloud9 looking really good. Niski, I'm sorry, they didn't win they didn't win four games.
Le Rip.
Talking about. But no, Niski's starting to look like he's a part of the team. You know, I hate saying this as a Cloud9 fan, but maybe they need to worry a little bit less on the memeing and a little bit more on what's going on in the Rift. Like, Cloud9 put out some really great teasers coming into the LCS season with Niski being all excited to be in a new league and or being back in the LCS and whatnot. But it's like, at the same time, it's like they're playing very... what's a good word? Odd?
Odd.
Yeah, odd. It's like they have really weird rotations. They have really awkward team fights, objective control. Sometimes you're sitting here like, okay, who are you playing through? Are you trying to play through the bot side? Sneaky's been playing well, but not really. It's not the Sneaky that we all know and love. It's just there's a lot of question marks still for Cloud9, but a 4-2 record isn't bad being in second place all by themselves. But they are one loss away from joining that horrific third place mosh pit with everyone else, and really two losses away from being down there with the worst team in the LCS, TSM, according to alphabetical order. I'm gonna keep saying that because it's so much fun. It's interesting to see how this is gonna play out, but really, again, the question still remains: who's gonna stop Team Liquid? The answer is no one.
Yeah, 100%. Except if it comes to cosplaying, then I think the bot lane of Cloud9 might have the advantage.
Yes, and I will shout this out because, you know, we trash on them. Okay, Golden Guardians on a two-game win streak. Okay, it's fine. But also Golden Guardians still sitting in seventh place, just above TSM because, you know, G comes before T. So, you know, we'll give you that.
Thank you for that, John. Beautiful. With that being said, we have another week ahead of us, Saturday the 16th of February and Sunday the 17th. What games are you highlighting for this week ahead?
Really, the game that I'm interested in is on Saturday, the 16th. That is 100 Thieves versus FlyQuest, both sitting at a 3-3 record. I feel like both teams are starting to play towards their potential. FlyQuest really shocking a lot of people with their play. Hanser coming out and just absolutely demolishing TSM, proving that they made a mistake switching them out of top lane. I thought that was absolutely great. 100 Thieves, still a lot of talent on that team. They're really starting to click now. That's going to be a very exciting matchup to watch. I think if TSM is playing, you might as well just take a nap because it's not going to be a good game. A lot of people are frustrated with TSM, and this isn't the old spring slump with TSM. This is something even bigger. A lot of people are worried about the direction of TSM is going. But other than that, really, that's the only thing that sticks out to me like that. The other one would be Cloud9 Echo Fox on Saturday as well. Echo Fox, I don't know. Echo Fox is technically in third place at 3-3, but their play is still spotty as well. I think Cloud9 can take that, but that might be another interesting one to watch.
Yeah, so is the roster management.
Well, yeah, well, so is the entire organization, but that's neither here nor there.
TSM, I'm going to go out on a limb and say TSM goes 1-1 this week. I think they win against Optic, but then get crushed by Liquid.
Oh, I don't even think they have a chance. I think TSM might try to best Fnatic's loss speed. From last week. I think TSM is going to try to lose faster than Fnatic against Team Liquid.
we will just have to wait and see on that. But exciting matchups ahead for both the LCS and LEC. That is not all, though, John. We do have a couple other esports announcements this week. Fortnite does have another event coming up, the Fortnite Secret Skirmish. This is going to happen February 14th through the 15th. 100 competitors competing for $500K in total prizes. Thursday will begin with duos at 1 p.m. before an unannounced competition. Friday will be the same with solos in place of duos, and then that unannounced competition following. Okay, we're running out of time, but just quickly, what are your thoughts on an unannounced competition? I like the idea it brings a surprise factor, an interesting factor to it. With that being said, if you're trying to build a competitive scene, you can't really hope for pros to prepare for something they have no idea what's coming.
But Joey, it's called a secret skirmish for a reason. It's a secret. No one's supposed to know about it.
Yeah, well, including the people competing.
The only secret I care about right now is Apex, and I am looking forward to playing that after we're done recording this podcast, because that secret is blowing everybody out of the water, and Fortnite is really trying to play. I'm sorry, one of Fortnite's leading developers even came out and said Apex was, quote, a pretty good game, which I think is code for, oh my gosh, we're in trouble. So I think that's going to be interesting, but Apex is the only secret that I currently care about.
And last but not least, Overwatch League Season 2 kicks off Week 1 this week, February 14th through the 17th. It's going to run with the overall number of teams. Again, we said it earlier in the show, they increased from 12 teams last season to 20 for this season. The Washington Justice of the Washington, D.C. area being one of those teams. Woot, woot. Let's see how it goes, John. I have high expectations for Overwatch League Season 2. Season 1 was off to a very exciting start. It kind of lulled out there for a little bit. Then it picked up toward the end. The offseason has been very electric for Overwatch League. Activision taking a lot of hits right now, but the Overwatch League still looking pretty strong overall. I'm excited for season two. I already bought the All Access Pass. I believe you did or are looking at doing it very soon. I'm ready for it, man. Washington Justice Champions season two?
I'm not going to go that far. I do feel like I feel like a lot of people are sleeping on them, and I think they're sleeping on them for all the wrong reasons. I don't think just because they picked up a lot of players from the contenders scene that that's going to make them bad. A lot of the players they picked up, Joey, we've had the opportunity to be around at the game gym. Decent players, great communicators, played on a very strong team with one of the biggest names in Overwatch being Rascal. I'm not going to sleep on them. I feel like they might, have a couple of weeks where they're going to have some growing pains and whatnot, but there are some really classy esport players on that team that are true professionals that are going to take this very seriously, and they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. They're not going to be Shanghai 2.0 here, which everyone is kind of painting them to be. I have a lot of faith in this Washington Justice team, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a homer. I'm saying that because their roster is actually better than a lot of people give them credit for. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, I think they'll be mid-tier at the very least. They're definitely not going to be a bottom feeder. I mean, even when you look at the players, yes, they are lacking talent in certain areas, but they do have talent in other areas. At the same point, you were signing the number one coach, arguably, from season one on this team in Wizard Chung. I think he's going to do miraculous things. You have Avila over there as well. She's got a great resume behind herself. I think we're going to see this team really transform, maybe not at the beginning of the season, but as the season goes on, I really think they have a chance of being that dark horse team and becoming a contender for later in playoffs. I think that does it, John. I think that is the end of the show this week. We talked about a lot of esports, a lot of great opportunities coming up, and Apex, we are ready to play some more.
Well, Nation, that does it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get exclusive access to content that nobody else in the world can get, unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on iTunes and Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to interact with us. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us and this show?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. On top of that, you can also find us streaming regularly on Twitch. We are now a Twitch community. Woot woot. Twitch.tv/OTN_live.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of the Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
Level up.